You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network.
Welcome to the Two Old Dolphins Podcast, a proud member of the Dolphin Talk Podcast Network. The show is hosted by Alex Symes and me, Scott Quiggle. Hello and welcome back to Two Old Dolphins Podcast. Today I have with me Andy Korch, since Alex is, well, is he in the air right now?
He is en route. Hi, thanks for having me today. Appreciate that. Love being part of this podcast. Yes, Alex is en route to Columbia, and I don't mean Columbia, you know, South Carolina. Columbia is in Columbia, South America. Him and his lovely wife, Monica, are heading down there. They stopped through Miami and visited with us last night, and interestingly enough, Scott, Alex or Monica had never been to Joe Stonecrab, the legendary Joe Stonecrab on South Beach.
So that's unreal. I've been to Joe Stonecrab.
Yeah, I mean, how can you come to Miami all the time? Heck, he lived here the first 20 plus years of his life. How can you never go? And it's funny. It's sort of a hoity-toity, you know, the in place to be Joe Stonecrab in South Florida restaurants. But growing up down here with Alex, it was like no big thing, you know, Joe Stonecrab.
Yeah, back then, right.
Back then. Yeah. But it's a landmark. We went there. He wanted to order. It's been around forever, too, right?
I mean, I was there in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah. It's been here, yeah. I think, 80-plus years. Joe Stonecrab. So, and it's in a beautiful building, an ornate building there on South Beach. And, you know, Alex wanted to order paella. I go, Alex, we're not in a Spanish restaurant, for gosh sakes. Stonecrabs, you know, the stuffed tomatoes with spinach, some lyonnaise potatoes and some of those great appetizers. And of course, you can't forget the world famous vodka gimlet, two of them. And you are calling for an Uber, my friend.
I'm hungry now, dang it.
That's my radio, live endorsement there on Joe Stonecrab.
But yeah, we'll have to contact them and look for some some advertisement support.
Yeah, you know, or at least a free plate of Stonecrab, Steve.
There you go. That's
Steve
good enough.
Steve Sowitz over there, the owner. But you know, what a game this week. Great game. But a little perplexing, and I know we're going to talk about some of the things we saw and some of the questions in our mind today during our two old, and with me, now older, Dolphins podcast.
Right. You're even a year older than Alex.
I am a year older, so I've even made this podcast older. God forbid.
Yes. We got a tiny bit older.
Yes,
how about
we
that?
Did. Yes.
Yeah, well, at perplexing number one, we can start off with we saw Gaskin come off the COVID list and play. And we also saw Holland come off the COVID list, but not play. Care to explain that one?
Well, my assumption was, I really don't have the answer to that question, but my assumption was that one was just sicker than the other, I guess.
Could be.
You know how COVID is. It's been a very unpredictable thing for us. You know, it's really getting around the NFL right now. It's interfering in my fantasy football playoff, I must say, like lots of people. So yeah, you really got to keep your eye on it. And I guess coaching in the NFL and getting a team ready now is going to be even trickier in the final 3 weeks of this season.
No kidding. No kidding. And even the coaches are getting it and not able to coach during the game. So
yeah, it's really out there. And yeah, it seems like, the alerts, my ESPN alerts on my phone keep ringing about this guy's got it, this guy, the other guy's got it. You know, this team doesn't have any cornerbacks. This team is losing all their quarterbacks. And, you just got to roll with the punches. It's next man up, I guess, in the NFL.
Right, right. Okay. So starting the game, obviously we did not win the coin flip and therefore got the ball first. And I was a bit, I would say, immediately disappointed to see us run three times consecutively to start the game between the tackles. Although, you know, that third one being the fumble may or may not have been a handoff up the middle.
Yeah, it was the fumble, I thought, was really on Tua in that first series, because it looked to me like he should have relinquished the ball. He seemed to have a hole in front of him. I think it was Johnson, Duke Johnson. And you know, and it was clear that they wanted to establish the run early in the game. Maybe they thought going in that they could run the ball against the Jets. And if that was the case, they felt that going in, they were correct, because they're very successful.
We did.
As you know.
Yes, 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 yes.
Right?
Right. And it was great to see, you know, Duke Johnson. We could start out right away with just saying, where has this running game been, right? Duke Johnson, scrap heap pickup during the season, finds himself starting because of the COVID situation and immediately demonstrates, as did to some degree Philip Lindsay when we picked him off the scrap heap, that they're better runners than what we already have on the team.
Yeah, it appears that way, and it makes you think or say to yourself, well, what were they thinking going into the season? Because when we went into the season, all I heard from the team and the upper brass and coaching staff was, we like the running backs we have. Well, the running backs they
stood at the podium and said it.
Yeah. So, and I don't know how good those running backs have been. I will say this as it relates to Johnson, Duke Johnson, and Philip Lindsay. I was listening to the post game show after the game on Sunday, and OJ McDuffie was making what I thought was a great point, which was, you know, it's not, even though running back is an instinctive position, you have to have a feel for your teammates around you. And it takes, and plus, you got to learn the playbook. And although a lot of it is similar from team to team, the call outs are different. So, you know, it takes a couple weeks, because the first thing I thought was, wow, Duke Johnson, a couple weeks ago, he was inactive for some reason against the Giants, but the game before that, it had four carries and they were decent carries. So I thought to myself, well, why was Johnson inactive for the Giants game? And it's something that really went through my mind, during the Jets game as he got better and better throughout that game. But again, OJ McDuffie in the post game show on WQAM here in Miami was bringing up the point that, you know, it's not that easy. It's not just plug and play for these players that get picked up on free agency like Duke Johnson did.
Right, right. Spent some time looking at the running backs, comparing them physically. Mainly the eyeball test. That's our thing. You know, when we get some opportunity to see them in gameplay, what's the difference between Ahmed and Brown and Gaskin in terms of what the coaches saw during preseason and why we stayed with what we had and didn't draft high running back and, you know, didn't put a higher focus on trying to find the right fit so that we had, you know, some differentiation in the backfield. You know, if you have three guys that have the same skill set, then you don't have that kind of differentiation. You know, and if your offensive scheme is going to be running outside the tackle and screen passes and, you know, a lot of cat, you know, third down style of thing, then, you know, maybe you stack your backfield with third down style running backs, which is, I believe, kind of what we have.
Yes.
Where is your short yardage situation? Because that happens in real time games all the time. And so when I see these backs that go down with one finger touching them, that doesn't work in short yardage situations when you need to get that tough yard or yard and a half or you're in the situation where you want to eat the clock and you're just pounding it away. You can't have these guys that are, you know, not able to break a tackle. The other observation that I've really noticed, if you pay attention, before we brought on Lindsay and Johnson, mm-hmm. I'm losing my mind. I'm looking at Gaskin in particular, since he's the starter, but Ahmed as well, and Brown, you know, who's a little bit of a different animal.
Yes.
And I common see cutback lanes or holes that they're not initially starting towards open up. The ability to adjust to those, I mean, most of you are football fans, know it's called vision, right? But not every running back has great vision. Often they're just going to hit the hole or, you know, not recognize penetration, things like that, and be able to adjust to it quickly. And I think Gaskin and Ahmed are not good at that.
Well, Scott, that was the thing that really resonated with me yesterday. The two things, and you mentioned really them both in that diatribe of yours there, was his vision. Johnson just seemed to have better vision. Some of the cutbacks, some of the plays he made during the course of the game seemed to be a byproduct of him having just good vision on where mm-hmm. that hole was and making the proper cut. Yep. The other thing which we mentioned, which is the tackles. I mean, 8 missed tackles forced as a runner in week 15. Duke Johnson, most by any running back this week in the NFL. I mean, that is something that we've not seen much in this Dolphin running attack. And, you know, often you can blame the offensive line, and sure, plenty of blame can go around there. But, mm-hmm. you know, also a really good running back. And that's why, you know, when we're watching the game and we're chatting back and forth on our little Dolphin chat there, I often mention, well, why aren't we just putting more value on the running back position? I mean, when you just are picking up running backs in late in the draft, 6th, 7th round, and as free agents, you're not especially putting much value on a running back. And, you know, look, yesterday, I think granted, we were playing the Jets, but yesterday our line performed much better or performed well. But I think our back had a lot to do with that, missing 8 tackles and you know, seeing the hole and making the proper cuts sure makes an offensive line look a lot better quite often as well.
Yes, it does. And, you know, if we pause to take a look at offensive grades, I think there's two things to apply to the things that we're seeing that we saw against the Jets. Number one, in that all of the grades are higher this week except for Jesse Davis. So, and it was amazing to me to see Austin Jackson have a near perfect game. He had an 86 overall, which is I don't think he's ever done. So
right.
And no again, pressures, no sacks, hits.
It was an incredible game. Again, you've got to, your enthusiasm can't get out of control because we were playing maybe the worst team in the NFL.
Right. We're playing the Jets. So
right.
The same thing applies to, you know, the running back situation. How much of what we're seeing is Duke Johnson full of energy in front of, you know, the crowd and the family and everything. He grew up being a Hurricane, playing in South Florida. All those things may have come together to give him, you know, that perfect situation. But man, it was wonderful to watch, wasn't it?
It was. And you know what was wonderful to watch too? You just mentioned it, Scott, which was Duke Johnson being back home in Miami, in South Florida, where he played high school football, college football, had a stellar career. He's beloved by this community. You could tell there was a little extra spring in that step, and it showed on the football field, that's for sure.
And I think he fed off the crowd a little bit. Every time Absolutely. He had a good run, you could hear Duke.
Yeah.
It was clear through the TV, you know, let alone, I imagine, being there. So
yeah, and when he played at the U, you know, bear in mind, when he played at the University of Miami, he was definitely a fan favorite. Because, you know, he's a little bit undersized. I mean, he's a smaller back in terms of height, but he's tough. He was never afraid at the U, and I saw the same, you know, ability to take on a tackler, never shy, despite his sort of diminutive size, to take on a tackler, no matter how big or small.
Mm-hmm. And it shows, and it paid off. So all the way back to vision, I saw it in Lindsay as well.
Yeah.
And so the difference between the Gaskin and the Ahmed and Lindsay and Johnson, part of it is those two things. One, the ability to make a quick adjustment and hit a hole, a cutback, and go. Once you hit that hole, go and get enough acceleration and have enough power and make yourself slim enough. You know, that's another terminology, making yourself slim.
Yes, yeah.
That you're not an easy takedown, right? You're going to break some tackles. I think the primary reason that our offensive line grades were so high, even in pass blocking, is because for the first time this year, we had a genuine running game.
Yeah, well, listen, a running game cures all. You want to alleviate some of the pressure on your quarterback, have a running game. I mean, how often, did we talk about when Marino was here that we had no running game? And it was part of the reason why, you know, we theorized that the Dolphins weren't making the Super Bowl every other year when Dan Marino was our quarterback. I mean, heck, he was, you know, the best. But yet we didn't, because we just didn't have that running game. And it balances all. And that's why I think, and I don't want to jump ahead of myself, but I'm looking into, you know, into next year and the NFL draft. I really feel like the Dolphins need to put a value on that running back position. And I'm not saying take one necessarily in the first round, but hey, in the second or third.
But take one high, a valued guy. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, ad infinitum, Alex and I have beat on that drum for especially the last 2 years. We need a running back. We need a number one wide receiver. We need a number one running back, a guy that, you know, has the stuff that you need and is durable and is young and is all of those things. So, and the team has continuously thought that they could solve the problems by picking up B player level, you know, guys on the back end of their career, running backs and free agency, and not spending high picks on them. And it's been driving us crazy.
Yeah. So. You know, the other thing I just want to point out, Scott, is we played yesterday or Sunday. I'm sorry. We're recording this on Tuesday, but we played with five offensive linemen, period. And they all played in one position the entire game. It seems like, you know, Jackson and Hunt now have been playing the guard position for some time, especially Jackson since they moved him. Eichenberg, or I can't block, as Alex likes to call him. Well, he was blocking pretty good yesterday or Sunday, and he's now been played at the left tackle position for some time, several games now. And then Dieter's back as sort of the guy in the middle. And it was good for me to see everyone play the entire game at one position. I like that for a change.
Yeah. Clearly, there was way too much shuffling happening that the solution was not figured out during preseason and still not figured out for I don't know how many games. I mean, I guess you could say 8 games if you're just looking at the record being 1-7.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had injuries and we had these other things, but you go look at another team and you see, oh, they're down 3 tackles and they're still blocking successfully. So
exactly. And again, not to beat a dead horse here, but a lot of that's because they have some good running backs too that help them with that, you know, getting through those challenging times with injuries and whatnot at the offensive line. But just to jump ahead a little bit, because I know you're going to talk about the first half and some of the play calling and whatnot.
Yep.
The other thing that struck me about this game peculiar was how they played so differently defensively the first half as opposed to the second half. That style of defense that we've been playing the last several games, where we're really crowding the line of scrimmage, we're rushing the passer from a lot of different positions, where guys are, you wouldn't expect coming off the line to cover or coming back off the line to cover, and really, you know, just sort of fooling the quarterback. And there were the Jets with Zach Wilson, a rookie quarterback, back there, and yet they weren't playing that style of defense the first half. inexplicable to me.
It was inexplicable to me as well. And even the people who were covering the game on television were putting up the stats. Zach Wilson is the worst against the blitz, you know,
yeah,
in the NFL.
Exactly.
And what is our specialty? Blitzing and pass rushing and sending guys. You know, the only difference is that we didn't have Javon Holland.
Yeah, I mean, we had.
Did we restructure our scheme to not blitz because Holland wasn't there?
Well, we had Brandon Jones back. He's a great blitzer as well, right?
So yeah, exactly. The two of those have been a one-two punch right. on some of these blitz schemes. So, but you should still be able to plug in another guy and play the same scheme.
Sure.
That's the scheme you practice. That's the scheme you've been successful with. So
sure. And case in point, when they started to do that the second half, well, the proof is in the pudding.
We Jets shut them down.
Shut them down. Yeah. They had that one touchdown on a pick six, and that was it. And so
right. And so
we shut them down and had six sacks on top of it all. So it was inexplicable to me the first half. And case in point, I mean, they scored on us pretty much at will the first half.
Well, let's rewind all the way to the Jets' first drive.
Okay.
After we punted, right?
Yep.
Because this was a hard one to watch because we were not applying pressure. We were not running our usual scheme. And the Jets moved right down the field. And it was a balanced drive, run, pass, run, pass, run, pass. And Wilson was like 4 for 4 at one point or 6 for 6 or something like that. You know, my first observation, of course, was my eyeballs say Carter is clearly a better running back than anyone we have on our roster.
Yeah, I agree.
Of course, that was before Duke went, you know, we knew what Duke was. We had no idea what Duke was going to do at this point in the game.
Right.
And I even got really discouraged as they go down the field running short passes. And then you see Howard pussy out on the tackle on Braxton Berrios.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you studied that or took a look at that, but.
No.
He made no real effort to tackle him. He absolutely had the angle. He absolutely had one-on-one. Braxton Berrios is a little guy.
Yes.
It's not like he's trying to tackle Henry or something, right?
Right.
Or even a running back. He's just a little wide receiver. He could have and he's bigger than him. He could have easily taken him out and prevented the touchdown there. And he just kind of turned his back and bumped him with his shoulder, and Berrios just went right on by and scored. So, yeah, I mean, that's what I call it, Howard pussying out.
Well, to your point, they surely did not look very inspired at the beginning of this game through the first quarter, especially. It looked like a very uninspired team. And watching the game, I said to myself, uh-oh, I mean, is this one of those, you know, games where you're looking ahead, you're looking past them? But heck, how can we look past the New York Jets? They are our arch enemy. We hate the New York Jets.
It's always a battle, even when one team is good and the other team is bad.
Always.
Both sides of the coin, right? We're
yes.
bad, they're good. Or I don't know if I could ever say they were good, but.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes. Yeah. No, it's always a tough game. It's always been, you know, a knockdown, drag down fight, a knockup, however you say it, drag down
yes,
fight.
Yes, yes. I mean, even when we had Marino and all those receivers and they had O'Brien.
Right.
They were having 45, you know,
yeah.
37 games.
It's always close. I mean, I don't know what the record is between us and the Jets, but it's probably about even. And so, you know.
We were even the first time we placed them. It was like dead exactly even. Then we beat them, so we're up one. Then we beat them again, so now I believe we're up two.
With lots of games being played. So it was peculiar to me, but I thought at the beginning of the game, they marched down the field. They score, as you say, on the – Berrios play or Berrios run. I said to myself at that point, oh no, I hope this isn't going to be one of those, you know, games that we're getting all these high expectations, won 5 games in a row and then land a big dud.
Yeah. If you're listening to Crowder's telling, you know, everyone on QAM that we're going to annihilate them, right?
Right.
It should be 30-3 or something. And right off the bat, it's worse than that. So, And the very – was it the very next play or was it 2 plays later or something? Our offense gets the ball and Tua immediately throws a pick, overthrows Devontae Parker.
And it was a horrible pass. I think it was intended for Gesicki, if I'm not mistaken. But it was a horrible pass. I mean, it's hard to tell who is actually, you know, supposed to be thrown to because it was just a bad pass. And Tua didn't look sharp. He didn't look inspired as well. I mean, it just – it wasn't going good at that point.
Here's where the angry old fan that I have kicks in a little bit. And I know Alex is even worse than I am at this. He gets all disgusted, right? Normally, I'll do some analysis around it. And all I wrote in my notes is Tua throws pick. that's the offensive. So it's hard for me to go back, especially with the memory degradation I've had over the last couple of years, and pick out the details around that one.
Well, it was Ashton Davis from the Jets that intercepted it at Miami's 43, and he returned it 18 yards and ultimately was tackled by Devontae Parker. But it was a horrific pass, and the Dolphins looked terrible, and the Jets just kept moving the ball.
Yeah. Well, the defense tightened up a little bit and at least forced a field goal, even though we gave them that awesome field position as a result of that. And so all of a sudden we're down 10-0 to the Jets in the first quarter.
Yeah, I mean, eight or nine minutes, 10 minutes into the game, down 10-0. And just like that, it was very, very discouraging because who knew what was going to happen at that point.
Right, exactly. So I for one instance, as we got the ball back, I had an electrifying moment where I said, here's where we get back, climb back into the game. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's I see Wilson beat his coverage and no safety coming over to help. And I saw I jumped out of my seat and I go, Wilson. And sure enough, to a bit late, I think, recognizes Wilson breaking free and winds up and heaves the ball. And Wilson has to come to a stop.
Yeah, I mean, he had a touchdown.
To adjust to that ball. That was a missed touchdown. There was no one on the backside. There was no safety with an angle. We know that Tua can make those throws because we've seen one or two this year now. And we saw a whole college career full of them where he'd drop it into the to a full stride wide receiver. So,
yeah, but let me ask you this, Scott. I've got a question for you.
Sure.
It really looked to me during the game, and you saw that I communicated that on our chat during the broadcast of the Dolphins on Sunday, but it looked to me like Tua had, I would at best, an average arm or below average. And I'm starting to think, is Tua's arm weaker than we thought? I don't know, going into this season, he just doesn't look like he has tremendous velocity on the ball. And we've seen some of the players that have played against us have made some comments to that effect. He kind of floats it out there. And it really looked that way, especially the first half of this game. The play, as you said, to Albert Wilson was I don't know if we threw it late or he just couldn't get it deep enough out there. It didn't look like he had a problem stepping into the throw, as I recall. Right. So, I'm starting to question, is Tua's arm really even average? What's your thoughts?
I still don't have a sense of it. I still think that I watch him. I know that he has to put more arc on it than, great big guy like the Bills quarterback or
Josh Allen or Herbert. Right,
or Herbert. Because he's not built that way. He's not a big monster with a shotgun or a howitzer for an arm.
Yes.
Whatever you want to do, but he's always had the touch and the ability to get it there. It's just you're not going to see it zip down on a laser. You're going to see it, arc
right
down there. So, so is it that, or I don't know? Are they not doing it enough so that if you don't have a rhythm with your wide receivers by practicing those long balls? Not just practicing them, but actually, throwing them in the game. Maybe it's just a matter of he underestimated how far he had to throw. Or maybe it was, there's a lot to it. But honestly, we don't see the long ball often enough to really, I think, be able to judge it.
Or maybe it's as simple as this, Scott. Maybe he really missed Jaylen Waddle more than we want to, account for. Maybe Jaylen Waddle not in that lineup has a bigger effect. And I'm going to bring up a point later in this podcast that regarding Jaylen Waddle and the Dolphins from last year's draft. Maybe Jaylen Waddle was actually a genius pick by the Dolphins. Maybe them not wanting Chase and not going after Pitts. You know, they've traded back. We've had that conversation here on this podcast. I've heard you and Alex talk about it many times. But maybe they actually got the best wide receiver for a team like the Dolphins with a very weak offensive line. Because the one thing about Jaylen Waddle you cannot deny is the separation he gets on short passes is better than any of the rookies coming out this past year in the draft.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we've given all kinds of hard times, you know, comparing Waddle to other people. But as we've gotten further and further in the season, Waddle has established himself as, you know, one of the leading pass catching rookie in the NFL.
Yeah. And it's
an excellent point.
Yeah. I mean, we make fun of it that, well, but he's catching 5 yard passes, but do you ever see the type of separation he's getting on those 5 yard passes? It's actually pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of a safety net to Tua that maybe did have a big effect on Tua, especially at the beginning of the game. You know, he started to get his rhythm, obviously, in the second half, primarily. And as the game went on, you know, got more of a rhythm to his game. You know, with that scoring touchdown at the beginning of the second quarter.
Yeah, you know, watching this, the first quarter of the game, almost the full first half of the game, was reminiscent or a metaphor for how the season began. Yeah. We didn't look prepared to play this game, and we certainly weren't prepared to play the first half of this season, the first eight games. Or
uninspired, unprepared. You're right.
Yes. So, you know, the scheme wasn't set up successfully. The players weren't executing, and a lot of the times when the players, you know, as a whole aggregate sort of number aren't executing, it's because of coaching. So let's keep moving.
All right.
And we ended up punting on that drive, and you know, the next drive I began a series of observations, because now the defense is getting a little more aggressive. They're having more success in stopping the Jets in situations. Mm-hmm. And I see, you know, a second and long, which is typically a passing situation, and third and long, which is always a passing situation if somebody wants to actually make the first down. And I'm wondering, why the fuck is Phillips not pass rushing on third and 10?
Yeah, it was a little
The
weird.
Kid has 8.5 sacks. He's on fire. He's on a streak. Why aren't you shifting your personnel to have the most successful people, the right people on the field during that situation? It made no sense to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I it was perplexing to me why he wasn't in there more. You know,
especially in the first half.
Yeah. And especially in the first half. Exactly. I mean, he logged in, I think 41 plays. He played 72% of the defensive snaps. So you wonder what they were thinking. And again, it goes back to the whole thing on defense in the first half, playing kind of like they played the first 5, 6, 7 games of the year when they were not attacking. And if there's anybody that attacks and is relentless on that defense, it's Jaylen Phillips. He is a relentless.
He has a motor that doesn't quit. That is exactly, that's a great description of how he plays. Absolutely. He's blocked and he still just doesn't stop.
Doesn't stop. So, and you saw that his senior year here down at the U at the University of Miami. So, I mean, it was weird. You make a great point. Why wasn't he in there, especially on some of those third down passing situations?
Yeah. You know, if it was just one play, I wouldn't bring it up.
Right.
But it kept happening. And I got to the point where now every time it was second and 10 or third and even longer, I'd be counting the guys on the defensive line and saying, where the fuck is Phillips?
Right.
Why isn't he out there?
Right.
So.
Right. You're right. You're right. So
we did stop them on that drive. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we got some offense and we got the opportunity to see something other than crap at this point. So there was a great catch I wanted to highlight, a throw and catch from Tua to Parker. Watching Johnson start to get into the groove that ultimately led him to 100-yard team. I loved it. I had to write this down. Johnson is breaking a tackle. Oh, no, two tackles. Oh, no, three tackles.
Right.
And that's just something that I'm not used to seeing in the Miami Dolphins uniform for quite some time.
Yeah.
So,
and it was funny as the game progressed, not to get ahead of ourselves, but it seemed like a little bit of it rubbed off on Gaskin, especially on that long 30-yard run that he had later.
Yeah. I think my comment at that point, if we're looking forward, was now Gaskin is worried about his job and he's running a lot harder.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and we could talk about this again later in the podcast, but you start to wonder now with the emergence of Johnson, Duke Johnson, and with what we saw from Philip Lindsay now coming off of COVID, who's going to be the short guy out, so to speak? Who's going to be the guy that maybe is on that inactive, you know, roster and not active for the next game Monday night against the Saints in New Orleans? So we'll see how that pans out.
Well, I'll tell you right now what I want to see.
Okay.
I want to see the combination of Lindsay and Johnson starting and Gaskin being that guy that comes in and to spell it. You can keep Ahmed, I guess. That's four guys riding the pine in case of emergency. And I don't care about Brown anymore. I think Brown was another Howard at this point and maybe a tick better than Howard. But we've seen what he can do, and he has not delivered.
So. Yeah, you know what, though, with Brown, here's my take on it. It's not so much Brown, because they went out in free agency and they went and got Malcolm Brown. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. And that's all well and good. And they got him because they thought they had two running backs in Ahmed and Gaskins that were their running backs. And they needed that one power back for the third and two or the, right, you know, third and one that could come in there and get you that 1, 2, 3 yards when you absolutely needed it. Malcolm Brown's not that, doesn't seem to be that guy. But I think they really misjudged the first part of that equation, which was, well, we got our first two guys that can, you know, that can carry the tote the ball for a majority of our carries until we need Malcolm Brown for a short yardage situation.
Yeah, well, they thought wrong, didn't they?
Well, clearly,
when average you, 2. Whatever yards per carry.
Yeah, and clearly when you see a guy like Duke Johnson play the kind of game he plays, or even Philip Lindsay and the little bit we saw from Philip Lindsay, he was clearly an upgrade to what we had been seeing, at least in my mind, in our running back position.
Right, and so the right running back behind the worst, you know, one of the worst offensive line, for a while, the worst offensive line in the NFL is really important. You've got to have the guy that has the vision. You've got to have the guy that can break tackles.
Exactly.
Make that guy that gets the penetration miss.
Right.
right away. So, almost perfectly so, like the crossing the T or dotting the I. It was a great run by Johnson to punch it in for a touchdown to take the score to 10-7.
Yeah, and it was a good drive. Like you said, it was culminated or started out with that long 37-yard pass to Devontae Parker. I love having mm-hmm. Parker in there because he does give a dimension to the passing game that I don't believe, at least now, even Waddle, that the other players on our roster provide.
Right. What he has is great hands and a great sense of, you know, being able to toe tap and those sideline things. And he's very aggressive. He became very aggressive. And so he's winning those jump balls.
He's a
receiver that doesn't get the separation. So you have to use him differently. They have to be back shoulder throws and jumpers and stuff like that. But he'll out physical little defensive backs.
Exactly. And his body positioning is excellent. He's able to get between himself and the ball, you know. So he offers
climb the ladder, bring it down.
Exactly. Yep. He provides that dimension that really no one else on the squad provides.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. I thought we were going to see that out of Williams after his rookie year, but I don't think he's going to be on the team next year.
Yeah, no, I would be shocked if he was.
Didn't happen.
No, no.
So, Jets get the ball back. We start out with a pretty nasty penalty, giving them field position. Van Ginkel clearly roughing the passer.
Yeah.
And then our defense, honestly, you know, we make the Keystone Cops joke a lot because we're old.
Right.
But, yeah, that crazy little flip back, whatever, flea flicker looking thing. Ultimately, Wilson throws back across the field to there were two uncovered receivers.
Yes.
In that pattern. Not one. There were two. He had his choice.
Yeah, one. And by the way, let me just interject. The other one was deeper. Probably would have been a touchdown pass had he thrown that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ultimately, they did score. They punched it in on the ground. 17-7 Jets, and you know, the momentum that I thought we were starting to build deflated a little bit. But we get the ball back, and we keep feeding Johnson.
Right.
We keep feeding Johnson. Right. And clearly, again, he's expressing that he has vision and makes a move to get extra, you know, making yourself slim, making yourself that reduced target and leaning into it gets you extra yards that I don't see our other backs get. And so instead of him going down after a 2-yard run, it's now 5 yards because he leaned forward and fell 3 yards forward, that type of thing, to get the placement. That's really important, especially when you're running between the tackles.
Yeah, and all of us that have been in South Florida and know Duke Johnson from his days at the University of Miami have seen that that's his sort of his MO. That he's great at, you know, getting that extra 2, 3, 4 yards after the initial hit. He's a great north-south runner, despite the fact that he's not tremendously huge, but he's a really great north-south runner with some good vision. So we're lucky, we're fortunate to have him. But I want to say this, after that second touchdown by the Jets and we're down 17-7, the thought that went through my head is, man, they are just so much more innovative. And they seem to be calling plays so much better than we were at that point in time. I mean, they just look like
they look like they were completely out coaching us.
They did. They did at that point.
A terrible team. So
a terrible team. Yes. Yes. Yeah. But I guess maybe our coaches knew something. They knew that we could run the ball against them. And as you said, that next drive, it was, you know, 5-yard run, 6-yard run, 4-yard run, 8-yard run, just one after another. A long, long drive that, I don't know, lasted 7 minutes, 7-plus minutes, that culminated with Sanders kicking that 24-yard field goal. So maybe our coaches knew that, hey, let's just stick to the plan. We know we can run against them, and they kept going at it.
So here's a question for you. I want to see whether you like this or not.
Sure.
We're now in the pattern that every time we're 3rd and 1 or shorter than that, 3rd and 1/2,
right,
Tua goes out of the game and Brissett comes in. Now, I understand that, you know, Brissett's taller, is more physical.
235 pounds, yeah.
Yeah. Are you good with that?
I am. You know what I'm not good with? I'm not good when they do that and they bring and they snap the ball to a running back, Gaskin, or someone like that in the backfield. But at least with Brissett, and I say this loosely, at least with Brissett, there's a threat that he could pass the ball. You know what I'm saying? So at least I like that. I'm not a big fan of the Wildcat. I'm not a big fan of that play occurring, especially on 3rd and short. But when you have a guy like...
the success rate is very low.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I mean, you look at aggregate data, it's very low.
I know. But I think Brissett, you know, especially when it's, you know, third and a half a yard, or it's an obvious quarterback sneak. I am not confident in Tua running the quarterback sneak.
Because of his size.
Because I just think he's small, and he Brissett seems to be able to sort of muscle through the line a little better than Tua does. So if that's your aim, I don't really have a problem with it. And again, the fact that he can, now they haven't really taken the ball, faked a handoff and play action and pass the ball on third and one or whatever, fourth and one.
Yeah. When Brissett was starting, they tried that a few times,
right,
and I believe he failed every time because he's so inaccurate. One of the things that got me on the fire flow thing there and the bad streak,
right,
was that he had the opportunity to play and was staying with Brissett, who was clearly an inferior quarterback, largely because of his ability to read defenses, react to them, and inaccuracy. The farther he got out of the pocket, the less accurate he was. And if he rolls all the way out, he has pretty much a 0% chance of completing a pass. I'm so done with Brissett as a quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. I don't want to see him out there. So maybe that's part of my, when I see him come out or Tua come out and Brissett go in, I feel like you're taking any possibility of throwing a pass out of the equation, and that the defense can then line up to prevent the run.
Yeah,
that's how I feel.
I think that possibility does exist. I understand what you're saying. Brissett has shown in the time he's been, you know, in there for significant playing time that he is not very accurate, and he's not much of a passer. So, you know, I understand where you're coming from, but when it's third and one and you have the possibility of doing a sneak, I really don't see the problem with bringing him in. I don't have a problem with that.
So I get the football side of it.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
So we got that field goal. They get one more drive, one more chance. And again, I make the same observation. I'm just going to be repetitive here because I want people listening to understand it's not just a one-time thing. It's a repeated thing. We got to second and 20 and third and 15. And on both plays, Phillips was not in there rushing the passer.
Yeah.
On this drive.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense, especially him being the hot hand. I mean, he's been lights out last several games. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd want that kid in there when it's second and 19 or, you know, third and 19 as it was during that drive, third and 15. I want him in there.
Ogbah and Phillips should be the two guys. You need to rotate them out to rest them? Fine. But in those situations, both those two guys need to be there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
rushing
so.
Rushing the passer.
Yeah, I think so.
Ogbah's going to knock it down or get a sack, and Phillips is going to relentlessly rush that passer.
Yeah.
And even chase people down from behind. He's got some quickness. So, and I got to give Jerome Baker some credit. He was somebody who seemed to me completely missing and completely out of place the first half of the season.
And he's a totally different Jerome Baker now, right?
Yep. And he has that little knack for finding a crack to get to the quarterback, and he ended this drive with a sack. So
right.
Let me
point out, Jerome Baker was on the field 100% of the snaps in yesterday's game. He was the leading tackler. He had two sacks. I love the fact of what they're doing with Baker. And again, it goes back to the first half and second half. First half, they're paying that defense that got us into that beautiful 1-7 start. And then the second half, and really towards the end of the first half, they started playing a more aggressive style of defense. But what I really love what they've been doing defensively is it seems like they've been putting Jerome Baker in a position to utilize his speed more and to make plays. And I think that has really helped it because Jerome Baker is to my mind, and maybe you would disagree, he's a cornerstone player on our defense. He's a really good upper echelon linebacker in the NFL when put in a position to make plays.
When he was a rookie and I saw how fast he was on the outside, I said, this kid has tons of capability, but he's light.
He is light. But that's why I think he needs to be put more in space as opposed to in the middle, where he's trying to filter around guards and centers and linemen.
Perhaps I'm getting there too slowly. this year we moved him into a middle position, at least more often, right? I know it's a sort of the amoeba and we're moving people around and that's great, you know, especially to confuse young quarterbacks and things like that, you know, who's going to be where. But he didn't have the meat to be in the middle.
I agree.
That's honestly how I feel about him, that outside linebacker is the right place for him. Blitzing linebacker is the right place for him. He doesn't have the physical dominance, but he has speed and he has quickness and he has a knack.
Yes.
So I like Jerome Baker. I'm not putting him down. I think he's just another one of those players where you need to recognize what he's good at and what he's not good at and make sure you're putting him in a position to succeed in your scheme.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that he is undersized clearly and needs to be put in a position where he can roam freely and move him around a lot, because I think he has that potential. He covers well for a linebacker. It's part of the reason why he's on, you know, every single play, because he's got a great skill set at that position. You know, something that I saw, by the way, when I watched the Colts play this weekend with those two linebackers they have, Leonard being one of them. I mean, those guys are making athletic plays on pass plays. So
Leonard's a phenom.
He's a phenom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Spectacular linebacker.
Yeah.
Love to see him in a Dolphins uniform.
Yeah, well, don't.
That's the kind of guy we need hunting in the middle.
don't hold your breath, but yes.
Yeah, I'm not.
But the second half, man, what a different tale of two cities, as they say, right?
Yes, we clicked, right? So, you know, their coin toss election was to receive the ball in the second half, as everyone in the NFL seems to do this way, and the defense just came out and stuffed them.
Right.
Just came right out and stuffed them.
Yes.
So they punt. We have this one's a little bit of a quicker drive, right?
Yes.
There were larger chunks involved with us moving the ball down the field, starting with a decent field position. Tua threw, I want to highlight the good as well as point out the bad, and Tua threw a great pass to Gesicki, who made a good catch and, you know, turn around upfield and everything. It was like perfect. It was absolutely put full stride. It was a laser focus pass. It was put exactly where only Gesicki could catch it and keep running, make the move that he wanted to move. Defender had no shot at it. It was just it was the kind of pass I just get excited about. I'm like, this is the accuracy that Tua has.
Right.
And it wasn't a 5-yard pass. It was, 11 yards or something?
It was a 20-yard gain. So
yeah, that's a lot of – half of it was yak,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was. Yes, yes. But, yeah, it was a great drive certainly,
and Johnson's run for the touchdown was beast mode.
It really was. It really was.
Five guys touched him. Five defenders touched him during that run.
Yeah, he's a tough little guy, man. And I love seeing that in our running back, certainly.
On defense, we see Van Ginkle stepping up and just consistently two plays in a row getting after Wilson.
Yes.
Then Wilson has a scramble where, again, Keystone Cops comes to mind. Five defenders missed Zach Wilson on a scramble.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the opposite of the Duke Johnson run for a touchdown. We didn't actually touch him, though.
Right.
You know, Johnson was being physical and running through tackles. Wilson was making people, faking them out of their shoes. Five defenders missed him.
Yeah. You know, I'm not so familiar with Zach Wilson, and obviously he's been out a big portion of his rookie year so far.
Right.
But he does show athleticism that I didn't realize he had. He's a much better runner than I realized, and that play really did exemplify that.
It started to worry me again, and then we had back-to-back sacks. Brandon Jones gets him first. Van Ginkle gets him second. Both of them were blitzes. They're, you know, different people coming from different angles. I'm like, here's the defense
right
that we play. Here's the one that we need to keep running because this kid can't handle it. So that ended that drive. That was fantastic. Our next offensive drive is one of those plays during our pre-podcast discussion that you told me you loved.
Oh my God. You know, there is nothing better in my mind in the NFL for a quarterback. I get newfound respect from quarterbacks when I see them run over a defensive player. And Tua ran over that Michael Carter on that 9-yard scramble up the middle. He literally ran over him. And I loved it. I really think that, and I have no empirical evidence to show you on this, but I really feel like in a locker room, when a player sees his quarterback make a play like that, it's inspiring.
And I think so too.
And Tua just ran over him. And I think it really, motivated the players. I think it really inspired the players and was a lot of fun to watch. I love that, the player.
I totally agree. It adds a level of energy to everyone around it. You see, I think one of the things that I love most about it when the little guy does that, right, because Tua is the little guy on the scene, it just shows you the amount of spirit and effort and determination that he has. He could have slid.
Yes.
And if Carter was coming in a hen hunting mode, he should have slid, but he sort of had a little bit of got him off balance.
Yes.
In the move that he made and then ran through him. And it was just, I agree with you. I love it.
Yeah, so. It was good. Despite the fact that obviously the play really didn't, I don't think we ended that drive ended. No, that drive did end in a touchdown. Did it not?
Yes, it does. Okay. And I'm headed there.
Right.
it's highly enjoyable because some fun things happened. So I wanted to comment again just to highlight this. Duke Johnson is breaking tackles.
Yeah.
And we're moving down the field because he continues to beat the first guy into the backfield. And then even a subsequent guy, he's running through arm tackles. So, again, it's the Jets. And we'll see. We'll really get a temperature check this Monday, right?
Yeah.
We'll see. Well, if we can keep these things going. But overall, the offense looked really good on this drive.
Great, and it culminated in what?
Yeah, so I want to take a second and say it was either the last podcast or the podcast before. I'm like, we don't have a fullback. I'm okay with us not having a fullback on the roster. It's not a position that our offense necessarily is going to use that often.
Right.
And it's important that, we try to maintain more skill players, that because we have such a problem with health, especially in wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
But in those situations, there's one guy on our team that is just, he has boundless energy. If you've ever listened to him talk, if you've ever seen him on the sideline, if you see the energy he brings to the field on every play, it's Christian Wilkins.
And we saw him
in the situation play, fullback on sort of a trick. It was early in the season. It was kind of like, look at that. Wilkins is out there. And I'm like, you know what? We should give him the opportunity to do that more. And even maybe once hand him the ball, because as long as you teach him ball security, that guy is going to put all of that weight and power that he has, and he has some agility as well for a big guy, and find a crack and force it up there. I'd love to see him get a touchdown.
Agility for a big guy. I mean, is that right? The understatement of the century? He jumped into the stands once he, and then did the worm on the field. Christian,
that is the energy I'm talking about.
Yeah, Christian Wilkins is infectious. I mean, that guy can inspire a team. And hey, let me add, him and Zach Sealer are top 10 defensive tackles PFF in the NFL this year. They are playing exceptional football. If there's one position I'm most happy with our team this year, it's probably the defensive tackles on the other side of the ball. But you did call it, Scott. I remember weeks and weeks ago saying, why don't they hand the ball to Christian Wilkins or maybe even throw it to him on one of those plays? Well, sure.
I never expected them to throw it to him.
Yeah,
never.
But sure enough, He's athletic enough at 310 plus pounds, athletic enough to make that kind of play. Now, he did bobble it a little when the ball came into him, but, you know, he got his mitts on it. He brought it in. And the next thing you know, he's eating a little popcorn in the stands.
Just, you know, since I discovered the elevator, I've been checking it out every week, and I forgot to check it out. He's got to be on the elevator. Is he on the elevator this week? Do you know?
I don't know. But
if he's not on the elevator, it's criminal.
It would be. It was a great play to watch. It was fun, and I think it really inspired the team. And you got to think those guys on the defensive side of the ball must have really been loving to see their guy, you know, one of the leaders on that defense, as you said, very vocal, you know, catching the ball for a touchdown and leaping in, doing the Hard Rock leap into the stands. Lots of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. So we take our first lead of the whole game, 24-17. As it turns out, well, I can't say we didn't look back, because the Jets do crawl back into it.
They do.
Yeah, so not their offense.
No.
Yeah. So, let's just touch on a couple of drives because I have some comments on them. You know, just get the ball back, and we give up two huge runs. I guess figuring that now we're up 24-7, they're going to try and throw the ball, and I don't know. I turned to my wife and my mom, who are both in the room with me but don't watch football at all.
Right.
And said, after those two runs, I said to them, because I wanted somebody to hear me, we need a turnover right here. And then I started to type it, and then the play goes off, and I hit send, and Sealer sack strips Wilson, and Ogba recovers it. And if I was somebody that said that all the time, you're like, well, yeah, you know, you're right once, a monkey on a keyboard, Shakespeare, blah, 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 right? But I hadn't said anything like that all game. I just said, we need the turnover right here to keep them out of this, and boom.
Well, sure enough, that's what we got with, I think it was roughly 13 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Sealer comes around, strips the ball out of Zach Wilson's hands, and Ogba, as you said, recovers at Miami's 39-yard line, and we get our turnover for the game. So, yeah, it was a great play by Sealer. And again, our defensive tackles, you know, I love it. You know you're playing well on that line when your interior linemen, like guys like Wilkins or Sealer, are making plays, sacks, especially plays, you know, tackles for losses. You know you're getting great play out of your team, out of your line, when those types of guys are making those types of plays.
It's fun. It's fun. Yep. Makes it fun to watch. Continues to fill us with hope for the future. We'll see.
Yep.
So we get the ball back, and this drive is just a head-scratcher. It's totally frustrating to me. It starts out with a holding on Long, who's on the outside, right?
Right.
Ford makes a nice catch, and it's so interesting to see that guy that we've cut and released and moved up and down from the practice squad and sent off to New England and stuff just keep rearing his head and making some key plays here and there.
Yeah, it's nice to see that. You know, a kid like that's resilient. He's, you know, bounced around, as you said, been on and off the roster so many times. But, you know, he's making a big play with one hand, no less. And make it a play when we need it. It's great to see that.
So here's the coaching stupidity that we get to, right? I just get so frustrated when we do dumb things. So it's third and short. Now, if you're going to run the ball on third and short, what have you seen? What evidence have you seen all game long?
Well,
who are you going to hand the ball to?
Yeah, I wouldn't be handing it to Myles Gaskin at that point. I mean,
it's short yardage.
Yes.
You want power. You want the ability to break a tackle. You want the ability to recognize penetration and get out of its way. And, you know, little Gaskin just runs right into a pile of people and does not get the first down.
Yeah. And
why did you not run Duke Johnson there?
Well, I agree with you. You know, Duke is the is
if you're going to run,
yeah. Duke's the guy that's been, you know, the hot hand. He touched the last time he touched the ball. He put it towards the goal line just before they scored, and you know it wasn't like he was tiring or anything at that point. I mean,
look, it's situationally important. Situationally, have the right people on the field for the play that you're calling.
Exactly.
Or call a different play.
Right. Right. But as
Gaskin could catch the ball, you know, have him, you know, do a 1 yard slant to that, you know, block and release or something. There's a million things you could do. That the call in that situation was fucking terrible. And it, I just got so much madder on at the coaches based on the next play.
Yeah, but before you get to the next play, let me just point something out. I mean, how often have we seen this year on third and one the Dolphins actually run play action and try to throw the ball? Never.
I
mean, it's
there
so
were
obvious
there were a few times during scripted plays that we did that, or during you know the first drive of the game or the first drive of the second half, especially when we were having set our initial success there.
Right.
In the middle of the season, we started winning games. We were having a lot of success on those scripted drives, and I saw those play actions called in appropriate situations during those drives. But those were the only times Alex and I were super frustrated by, you know, we come out and we have this initial drive that's a real mix of run and pass and play action and options and you know, all this stuff to move the ball down the field. And then we don't ever put one together like that after.
And especially when you have a quarterback like Tua, who's a really good ball handler. I mean, he's great at the play, running the play action. He's a great ball.
RPOs.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's inexplicable, but you're right. That next play was a head scratcher to me.
So we have the lead. We're up 24-17. Ball's on our side of the 50, wasn't it?
It was on the 48-yard line.
Yeah, just on our side of the 50. Mm-hmm. And we call a fake punt. And clearly the defense was lined up in such a way that that play could not be successful.
Exactly.
And they hike it and try to do it anyways, and it's a complete fucking disaster.
Complete disaster.
So,
and you know,
one, it's a situational bad call. Two, it's a terrible execution. It hasn't been practiced enough. And three, there needs to be a situation where there's a quick read. I don't care who the person responsible is for making it, the backup quarterback that's, I don't know, the center, somebody
right.
who says they're not in the right alignment for this to be successful.
Punt the ball.
Let's do a little hand signal or something, you know, stick your finger up your ass.
I don't know, whatever,
to tell them to actually punt out of that situation.
You're right. It was ridiculous. It was clear that they weren't going to make it the way that they were defending that. It looked like the Jets knew or thought they knew, well, they did know that they were set up for the fake punt. And my take on it is this. I didn't have a problem they went for it on fourth and one. I had the problem they went for it with a fake punt. When you're running the ball that successfully and you want to go for it around midfield and fourth and one to stick the dagger in them 10 and a half minutes left in the game, no problem. But why would you do it on a fake punt, for gosh sakes? Bring Duke Johnson in there, who's been running the ball great. And
RPO it.
And right. Yeah. Exactly.
So, yeah, that's, you know, one of our more successful plays, especially with him running like that. So an RPO, he either runs it or you're scrambling out for, you know, short pass to Gesicki or Smythe or somebody unexpected. There's a lot of things you could do there.
Precisely.
If you want to shove it in their face. And that was terrible. That was just terrible. So they get the ball back and we get to see Phillips in there in the right situation. The defense steps up even after that debacle where they get the ball in great field position and we just utterly stuff them and it ends with a sack by Phillips.
Yeah. And again, the defense playing more aggressive the second half, you know, blitzing, coming from a lot of different positions. It looked like Wilson was very confused at that point, didn't know where it was coming from. And then to make matters even better, they had a punter who couldn't punt the ball at that point for whatever reason come the second half.
Yeah. Yep. So this game is like a emotional roller coaster. You know, we see that bad thing that gets you so angry, and then the defense makes you feel great, especially, you know, now Phillips is in the right situation, makes a key play to end a drive, get the ball back. You're on a high. You've been on low. You're on a high. Immediately low.
Right.
Tua throws, you know, and we discussed this a little bit too prior, you know, to the podcast actually starting, is, you know, how much blame is on Tua versus how much blame is on the play call and the play design and the scheme and the situation and all that stuff. So I still think it's more on Tua. It was his job to not just automatically throw it out there, to actually, you know, or possibly not telegraph so much and just stare immediately off to the left, because it kind of looked like he was telegraphing, which is what allowed the corner to make the read on it and jump the ball.
Well, plus I thought it was a horrific call. I'm not exonerating Tua for the interception and the pick six, but you had a Hunter Long out there on Brandon Echols. Brandon Echols, speedy cornerback. Hunter Long, not so speedy tight end. So, of course, Echols is on him, right? On him tight.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I likened it to that play early in the season when they threw the ball to Waddle in the end zone.
Oh, remember? God. That you got to bring that thing up again.
Oh, man, like one of the most horrific plays I've ever seen in an NFL game. It wasn't as bad as that, but I liken it to that because it had no shot of working. Echols knew that Hunter Long is not running past me on a long pass, so he was playing up tight on it and had a beat on it. As soon as he turned and looked, Echols was full speed towards the ball and towards the quick pass.
He took one look at where Tua was looking. Tua was staring at Long.
Yeah.
And just jumped it.
Right. Yeah. And so I thought it was a horrific play call. And you're right though. Tua should be more alert and more cognizant of the play of that defensive back not to make that throw at all.
Yes, exactly. So the blame is spread. You know, ultimately Tua has to own it. It's a pick. It's an interception on his record, but it was not set up to be successful from the start.
Right. So. But how great is it after that occurs that the very next drive, Miami says, you know what, made a mistake, but we're not letting you back in this game, and they really didn't.
Yeah, and this was a running drive.
Yes,
Johnson was on fire. Gaskin has his best run of the year.
Exactly. 30 yards.
This is the one I was talking about.
Yes.
Like, he hasn't been running well all the other times he's touched the ball, but here he pops one. And that was, it was great to see for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So unreal effort. And ultimately Tua hits Parker for this touchdown.
Which what a great nuance on that. I mean, first play, he tries to get him up high in the corner. Right. And just misses the pass. And so, you know, of course, what's the next play going to be? It's going to be Parker faking like he's going to that corner again and then doing an in pattern real quick slant, which he caught him in stride. And, you know, the big body, he's towards the end zone. It's over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love it. 31-24 at this point.
Yep.
Ultimately, the game ends this way, but we got to give a little credit for the last couple of drives, especially on the defensive side. You know, they came out, and I was a little surprised that they kept trying to run it. I guess they wanted to keep the pressure off of Wilson and not just have Dolphins pin their ears back on every play.
Yes.
At this point, because they cannot handle what we're given to them.
Yeah.
But every time he tried to make a pass in any way, he had pressure.
Yeah.
Every single time. And I can remember earlier in the season saying, you know, where's the pressure? There's no pressure. We're giving these guys all this time. And he was just – and the second half of the season, it was, you know, here, right here in front of us to see we're putting pressure on him in every single play, every time he tried to pass.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first half of the season defense and then the second half of the season defense. It was personified in this game in two halves of our game against the Jets this past Sunday. So it was peculiar to me that it was played out that way, but it was obvious that if we're going to be good defensively, we have to do it by being innovative and pressuring the quarterback from a lot of different positions. And let me point out, it's worked not only against guys like Zach Wilson, let's call him a neophyte NFL quarterback in his first year, but it's also happened against a former MVP in Lamar Jackson. So it's a defense that works. Yes, you could get an 80-yard pass thrown against you as well playing that type of a risk. It's more of a risky defense to play, but it's working. And I say, if it works, don't fix it. If it, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
So, you know, as a fan, as somebody that you want to have some level of de-stress.
Yes.
And so we've enjoyed how the defense has been playing. Here's a chance for the offense to say, we're going to end this game here. We have the ball. All we need to do is, you know, get a first down or two, and we own the end of this game.
Right.
Another missed opportunity. So, you know, with this particular offensive opportunity, I didn't have any one play that I said we shouldn't have called that, or that was a bad idea, or that was terrible execution, or something like that. It was a three and out, though.
Yes. So, at a time when you don't want, I mean, we got the ball with just over 2 minutes. I think it was.
Yes, we could have ended the game.
Yes. Yeah, that's where you want to do that. Of course, I mean, we're being very conservative at that point. The Jets are crowding the line because they're expecting us to run. I think Johnson got a respectable 4 or 5 yard gain on that in that drive or that three and out. But you know, it's the one thing I will say that's good that came out of that particular sequence of plays is that our punter, who seems to be really coming around, had a great 56-yard punt to end that three and out, and gave them the ball back with, I guess, about a minute and 30-plus seconds left in the game. But, you know, Pilardi seemed to be punting the ball well most of the game, and it seemed to be punting really well, you know, the second half of the season.
Yes, yeah. So where we had, you know, fails on every part of the game in the first half of the season. Special teams was terrible, offense was terrible, defense was inexplicably bad.
Right.
So head scratcher, right? Things do seem to be coming together, at least on defense and somewhat on special teams as well.
Yeah, but
the offense is scoring, they're not getting blanked.
Right.
So.
But are you like me? Your optimism is sort of guarded because
it's hedged. If we come out and we beat the Saints on Monday night, I'm all in.
Yeah. Especially after seeing the Saints do what they did to Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just a couple days ago.
That's right. That's right. So there's a lot to prove. We've been beating the teams that we should be beating.
Yes.
Right. With the one exception, the really good win in there is the Baltimore win.
Yes. Yes.
Every other team we should have beat, and as Urban Meyer gets fired, and that is a dumpster fire in Jacksonville, a hot mess. I saw that joke today. Henry, who's not even playing, has as many touchdown passes in the last 7 games as Sunshine does.
God,
you're like, what? That's how did we lose to that team? I keep looking back at that one, and I ask over and over, and how did we lose to that? How did we lose to Jacksonville?
Well, I'll give you one way we lost to them. We weren't playing the defense we're playing now. It's ridiculous.
Exactly. We should have been after that kid on every play, every possible pass play. We should have been after him.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, you know, again, you can't cry over spilt milk. You can't look back and change the past. But boy, those two games, especially the Atlanta game and the and the Jacksonville, if any, would really put us in a different position.
With those two W's right now, we'd be in a completely different position. Exactly right.
But you know what? I was looking at some analytics, Scott. And again, thank you for welcoming me onto Two Old Dolphins today. But I was looking at some statistics, some analytics, and we only have an 11%, or at least before this week's game, we had an 11% chance of making the playoffs. But before this weekend, if we won out, 77% chance of making the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Now, that's no easy road, as you mentioned. New Orleans on Monday night, you know, who dat in the big dome on a Monday night. That crowd is loud. It's a tough place to win. But, you know, they're playing with kind of a guy that's sort of a quarterback, but more of a runner. Kamara is back, but he sure laid an egg in this game against Tampa Bay.
He does not look like the Kamara that.
No. And so, and he's been injured this year. He's been out five games. But I think if the Dolphins can really bear down and stop the run, that they're going to have a good chance of winning this game against New Orleans. I really do believe that. I think the key to that game is going to be stopping Kamara and Taysom Hill from running the ball, because Taysom Hill is not a great passer, and he's never going to be a great passer. And so I think that's a key thing for the Dolphins this week. But, you know,
except if you're Chris Sims.
Yeah, I guess. I think that it's no easy road to toe right now, because yes, Tennessee has not been playing well, but they're fighting for a division, and we're going to be on the road at the following week at Tennessee. And then, of course, that game is going to be significant against New England, the last game of the year. Clearly, it's going to be significant to New England, especially after the loss against the Colts this past week. I mean, New England's going to need to win some games to win the division, and they're right there on the precipice of doing that. So it starts this weekend with their game against the Bills, which is going to be a huge game.
Yes. I read Barry Jackson's article. It says if we win out, the high potential is 70%, 77.
Yeah, I think it was 77%. Like
with one condition, that the Bills beat the Patriots.
Really?
Because if the Bills don't beat the Patriots, then our chances fall to 50%.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting too. Obviously, he did some research and talked to some people and put some effort into this article. So if you haven't read it, you know, read it. We needed to handle ourselves one game at a time. As fans and analysts and all that, we can certainly look at all the other teams. We like to watch other football outside of the Dolphins anyways.
Yes. So
it's all interesting, and especially at the end of the season. I know I always get cranked up to watch other teams the closer we get to the end of the season. So
yeah, well, especially when your team's not in the playoffs. But, hey, listen, I'm keeping hope. I think that we do have a shot. I think that if we play the kind of defense that we've been playing, especially that second half, you know, this week, the second half against the Jets, but if we keep playing that kind of defense and can hold a team, I mean, prior to this game, I think the last five games, 11-point average, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. So if we can keep these games close with a good defense, I think we have a chance of beating any of these last three teams that we go against.
We haven't our record against the Saints historically is 6-4, so we have a winning record against them. But we actually haven't played them since October of 2009.
Wow, it's been a long time.
When the stadium was still called, or briefly called, Landshark
Stadium.
Remember that?
Yes,
Landshark Stadium in Miami Gardens.
Well, that was the Jimmy Buffett deal, right?
Yes.
So the first game that it was called Landshark Stadium, we were playing the Colts on a Monday night, and I went to the game, and as I walked into the stadium, they had a stage set up outside the stadium, you know, part of their sort of tailgate area that the Dolphins have. And I walked up, and I'm hearing a Jimmy Buffett song, and I'm saying to the guy who's with me, God, that guy sounds great. He sounds just like Jimmy Buffett. Well, as we got closer, sure enough, it was Jimmy Buffett that was playing out in front of the stadium. One of the great memories I have of that albeit brief naming of the stadium, Landshark Stadium. I think I got to say, and this could be maybe a segment on future Two Old Dolphins, but I got to say, I've not been a big fan of the naming of stadiums, but Hard Rock Stadium. Now that sounds like an NFL stadium.
It sounds
stadium.
Like an awesome name. It does. Totally. I love it.
Yes.
Keep it, please. Yes, exactly. I know it has everything to do with the money, but yes, I do love the name Hard Rock Stadium, and I hope they keep it forever.
Yes. And the other thing I just want to point out, maybe you caught it, because when you came down for the Atlanta game with Alex, I don't know if you caught it, and it was at the first time you'd been there since the roof was put on the stadium, but it does make it a much louder stadium. I have to tell you, it just seems louder with that roof on it.
Yeah, and even when the stadium is populated with other fans, like the Giants game.
Yes, yes.
It's clear. Yes, and I could clearly hear Duke this week, you know, and I loved it.
So do you want to hear more Duke?
I do. I want to see I said it before, I'll repeat myself. I want to see Lindsay and Duke.
But I don't think they're going to keep four active running backs on the roster, and if they did, would it make sense that those four, or would Ahmed be on your practice squad? Because if Ahmed's on the practice squad, someone's going to probably poach him from us.
I'm okay with that.
Are you?
I'm okay with that. I don't care.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yep. I might, you know, thanks. Thanks for the effort. Thanks for, you know, the things that you did, but I'm totally okay with it. So
couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
So where do we go from here, old Dolphin?
All right, so we are talking about the New Orleans game. Mm-hmm. I think the key to the game is a surprise, surprise with the defense.
Yeah.
That the offense just has to not lose.
Yep.
You know, they move the ball, take what the Saints are willing to give you, analyze what they're willing to give you. Don't just try and force your game plan down their throat. And so, you know, be agile, be flexible on offense, and just don't give the ball away. On the defensive side, I think with Taysom Hill being somewhat of a running quarterback, mm-hmm. if you apply essentially the same scheme with some wrinkles in it that you took and beat the hell out of Jackson in the Baltimore game, that you could have success. So take that scheme from the Baltimore game, the defensive scheme, and throw a wrinkle or two in there so it's not exactly the same, but stick with it. That will give you the highest probability of success.
Couldn't agree with you more. Hill is a poor man's version of Lamar Jackson. And he doesn't throw the ball as well as Lamar. So yeah, I think a similar type of you know, smothering,
attack.
Exactly.
Attack. Don't let up.
And I think that's what's going to work. And if they can do that and stop the run, I think they have an excellent chance. And as you say, eliminate the turnovers, because one thing that we saw clearly with New Orleans this week, and it's mm-hmm. been the case most of the year, they have a very opportunistic defense.
Take what they can give you. And if you can get the Lindsay Johnson combination going, getting some semblance of a running game, they're going to have to loosen up a little.
Right.
So, yeah. So do I think, I guess we have to pick. We have to, you know, you could be realistic or you could be fanboy. I don't care.
Right.
During the preseason, we always do our picks. Alex picked a loss here. I picked a win because I didn't believe in quarterbacks of New Orleans. You know, I didn't believe in Jameis Winston. I've never liked him. I thought I had problems with him.
Right.
you know, people are all nutty about Taysom Hill, but I've watched him and I don't see really anything I like very much about him being a real quarterback.
Yeah, I think our defense, I agree with you. I think I think he's too one-dimensional. I think our defense is playing too well right now. I think we can provide the type of of defensive scheme that's going to, you know, thwart his abilities as a runner. And I see the Dolphins coming out winning this game. A sort of a mistake-free kind of game. As long as they can stay with them early and they don't sort of implode and they don't come out, you know, they can, one thing I will say, they cannot come out the way they came out the Jets this week and try to recuperate from that. Because if they go down 17 points or something to New Orleans,
they're not coming back against this defense.
No, they're not. So so the key is you know, no turnovers, smother them on defense and try to, you know, stop the run first. And you know, win the game in the fourth quarter, sort of how they did against the Jets, you know, moving the ball the way they did, especially that second half.
Yeah. If New Orleans came out and played the way they did against Tampa, we'd have very little shot.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yes.
But I don't think that they sustain that. I think that's honestly that they get themselves up for this Tampa matchup. Seems like all the time. Especially in the regular season, and that they can't maintain it, and that's the key. You know, they may be taking us for granted to some degree as well.
Yeah, I mean, so. I think the one thing to remember is that they the last three games of the season, unlike the last one and some of the other ones we've had more recently in these wins, these teams are fighting for their playoff lives. So I don't think in any of these three games you're going to see a lack of effort. I don't think you're going to see a lack of focus from any of these teams that were playing the last three games of the year. They're not, you know, playing for the offseason. They're playing for, you know, the playoffs. So it's going to be tough wins, but I think our team is up to it.
I think we have a chance.
Yep.
I think we have a fighting chance. So
agreed.
Awesome. You know what time it is now?
I'm wondering.
It's time for the Ass Clown Award.
Okay. Well, it's going to be tough this week, but what do you think?
What the hell's going on out here?
I only have one runner-up.
Okay.
So my runner-up is Mr. Xavien Howard. It's not that he had a bad game. It's that he gave up 7 points to the Jets on being a pussy. So.
Well, I think that's when that is your runner up, you know, we've had a pretty good game because it's kind of a reach, I must tell you, but I get it.
Yep. I just want to see maximum effort from all the time. And when I see somebody just not give a half ass, you know, and a score on a score or a turnover or something, you know, the no effort thing just kills me. So. So yeah, it's not a deep or serious one to be overly insulted with, just motivated to be, have your head in the game in every play and give it your all.
Right. So. Right.
Clearly the Ash Clown Award this week goes to whoever, and I can't name a name cause we don't exactly know, called and or approved the fake punt on fourth down. And it's really the consecutive plays. Having the wrong personnel for the short yardage kind of led me to the anger level I had at that play call. But that's the ass clown move that could have cost us the game. Thank the Lord it didn't.
Well, would that be our special teams coach, Danny Crossman? Would that be – I mean, you got to figure that Flo was on board for the fake punt. And certainly, like you said, didn't make any sense because if you're going to go for it on fourth and one, I would, you know, call me crazy, but I would rather have Duke Johnson running the ball than Clayton Feldegem or however you pronounce his last name.
Yep.
I mean, I'd rather have Duke running that ball on fourth and one than a third string safety by the name of Clayton. So, it was an ass clown play. Whoever's responsible for it, especially at that situation in the fourth quarter,
the execution made
no sense. No sense whatsoever.
Clearly, that could have cost us the game, and I'm glad it did not. I mean, who hates the Jets more than we do?
Yeah, which begs the one question, which you could ask, is why not? Because they are the New York Jets. Why wouldn't you just give the whole Jet organization the ass clown of the week? I mean, they are an ass clown organization for sure.
They are. But honestly, I thought that the coaching staff of the Jets, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, had a game plan where they were just pulling out every trick and every, you know, funky thing that pass from the middle of the field to the outside, the flea flicker in the backfield. They just kept pulling out everything they could to try to win this game, even though they knew they were outmatched, that the Dolphins are a better team than they
are. And that flea flicker, had you ever seen a play like that? Throws the ball, you know, 8-9 yards down the field, and the guy turns and laterals across the field. Overhand.
It was an overhand pass. It was a bullet. Yeah.
I mean, I'd never seen anything like that. It was actually kind of remarkable. My hat's off to him.
It was, you know what it was? It was an extended version of the hook and lateral.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. It was like something we used to do when we were kids, you know, okay, you're going to catch a ball in the middle field, turn and throw it across the field, the cords running up the sidelines from the back, you know, or whatever. I mean, it was one of those plays.
So overall, the Jets are a joke and have been a joke for a long time. The fact that they hired Gase after we fired him was the biggest joke of all. We laughed about it for years. We wish we could still be laughing about it. So yeah, you know, you could give them the Ask Clown Award anytime you want.
Yeah,
but
well,
for this game, I have to give their coaching staff some credit.
Well, and the other thing is, in looking back, and I was saying this during the draft, pre-draft last year, my opinion, the second best player in that draft after Lawrence was Micah Parsons. He was I watch college football more than I watch pro football. And Micah Parsons, it was obvious that he was going to come into the NFL and dominate to me.
Yeah, I grew up watching Penn State football, so I always have a little thing for it. My dad grew up right outside of College Station, so I'm always aware of, you know, I'm not like a big fan of Penn State or anything, but I'm always aware.
You know, and it exemplifies one thing, and I know we've got to go, but it exemplifies one thing. The NFL, they do undervalue running backs, and they overvalue quarterbacks. Because you can't tell me that Zach Wilson is going to be in the NFL Hall of Fame. If I were betting, and I'm not sort of putting Micah Parsons in the NFL Hall of Fame just yet, but I would bet that's going to happen a lot more likely than Zach Wilson being in the NFL Hall of Fame. So he was clearly the second best player, in my opinion, out of that draft last year. Yet he fell all the way down to the Cowboys, and they've got maybe the NFL Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year on their roster as a rookie.
Yeah, guy's spectacular.
Spectacular.
I was praying that he was going to fall to us because I would have easily picked him before Phillips.
Would have had no problem with it whatsoever. None.
Yeah.
But highly unlikely with his level of talent that he was going to fall that far.
All right. That's it for today. Can I get a you know what?
You got
in
it.
3, 2, 1, go Dolphins!
Two Old Dolphins podcast is proud to be a member of the Dolphins Talk Podcast Network. In addition to our website at twooldolfans.com, iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play, we can also be found at dolphinstalk.com. You can reach out to us through our website and email address that's there, or find us on Twitter where we're very active. We have an Instagram account that we post to occasionally and a Facebook page. Our podcast contains the music of two bands. We'd like to thank the original Tartanic drum and bagpipe champions. You can find their music and more at tartanic.net. A huge shout out to Rick DeJesus and the boys of Adelitas Way. Can't thank them enough for allowing us to use their kick-ass rock in our podcast. You can find them everywhere, Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Spotify. And make sure to catch them when they're touring because they are the best.